Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Today on your show, employee engagement and how career management affects it. Also, career flow and how careers impact the economy. Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of Career Cycles, a career management social enterprise. And I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz. Thanks for tuning in this morning. And a special welcome to members of the Association of Career Professionals International, tuning in on the internet from across the globe. As senior economist at ATB Financial, Todd Hirsch tracks current developments in North America's economy. He's written about our need to rethink the notion of careers. He's author of The Boiling Frog Dilemma. Todd appears regularly as an economic commentator on CBC Radio, TV, in the press, and teaches at the University of Calgary. Later in the show, we'll hear Todd talk about how wealth starts with an idea and how those ideas link to creativity, innovation, entrepreneurialism, and careers. But first, Deirdre Pickerel is senior consultant at Life Strategies in Vancouver. She's a career development specialist, educator, manager, and human resource professional. Deirdre is currently completing a PhD in organizational systems, and her research interest is the impact of career management on employee engagement. Stay tuned and we'll hear Deirdre discuss her new model of employee engagement. Also, Dr. Roberta Nolt is president of Life Strategies. She's an award-winning career management specialist with expertise in counseling, coaching, consulting, training, curriculum design, research, and writing. Among other awards, Roberta's won the Canadian Career Development Foundation's prestigious Stu Conger Award for Leadership in Career Counseling and Career Development in Canada. Today, we'll hear Roberta talk about her latest book, co-authored with Spencer Niles and Norm Amundsen, called Career Flow, A Hope-Centered Approach to Career Development. Deirdre Pickerel and Roberta Nolt join me live by phone. Welcome to Career Buzz.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be here.
So thanks for joining us today. Deirdre, what do you like about your career these days?
Well, I think pretty much everything. I'm fairly engaged with my career. We have an incredible variety to our work, and that's exciting. There's always something new coming through, and so no day is the same.
So lots of variety.
Lots of variety.
And what are you doing as part of Life Strategies team?
Well, as a senior consultant, one of my roles is managing the Learn Online program. So we have, I've probably lost count, at least 35 or 40 courses that we run through facilitated e-learning, anything from using psychometric assessments to Global Career Development Facilitator, which is a designation in our field training. I just started this morning a Personality Dimensions Facilitator training online. And obviously, I do a lot of consulting work. I'm doing an employee engagement survey for an organization in the interior right now. And the list probably goes on and on, Mark. So
right,
let's stop there.
Well, I'm gonna pick up on that employee engagement survey a bit later in our conversation. But let me first ask you, what strengths do you draw on? Personal strengths, career strengths, do you draw on to be successful in your career?
Oh boy. Well, I think I put in a lot of hours.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So probably not as much as Roberta, but definitely, I work hard, and I try and be thoughtful about the work that I do. We want to find a balance. This comes from our engagement model, a balance between capacity and challenge. So I like to continually add more challenge to my work so that I'm always having to reach, but not to the point where I'm, overwhelmed and frustrated and things like that. So...
Great. And Roberta Nolt, what do you like about all the elements that make up your career?
Well, it's interesting that the first word that came to mind for me as well was variety, and Deirdre already used that one. But really, being self-employed and having the choice of projects to take on, that's what I love. And then also making a significant difference. I'm at the stage of my career now where the ripple effect is just a little bit bigger, where I used to be able to work with a small group of individuals, and now I work with people that are training individuals. And so you can see that change sort of progressing throughout the world.
Nice. And same question to you, Roberta, in terms of strengths, and it's such an important topic about using our strengths daily in work. What are the strengths that you draw on to be successful?
I think similar to Deirdre, that notion of being a hard worker is really important, especially in self-employment. But I think that what I bring to the team is resilience and a constant optimism and always a belief that things are going to be okay. And of course, we'll talk about that more in the hope-centered approach. And then I'm also very quick thinking. So I have that ability to make decisions or to write things very quickly. And who knew that my typing speed would actually be helpful? But that typing 11 course back in the day has really helped with teaching online and writing proposals and those kinds of things, so that I'm not limping through that piece.
Isn't that an interesting way of putting it, and drawing on some skills that you developed much earlier, and you might not have even known how you would deploy those later in your career.
Oh, I only took that because it was a way of not having to go to real classes. Yeah.
That's great. You're listening to Career Buzz here on CIUT. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. We're talking to Deirdre Pickerell and Roberta Nolte at Life Strategies. Before we get into each of your areas of expertise, I'd like to get a little bit of your own career stories. Deirdre, your career has been within HR and training and development and career management. What's one turning point in your career story that you can share with listeners?
I don't think I've ever not had a turning point, but probably one of the earliest ones that comes up for me is when I was starting to work at an agency and decided that I needed some specific training, and so returned to school to do, at that time, what was called the Employment Counseling Diploma at Douglas College. And as luck would have it, Roberta was one of my professors. And so staying connected with her and meeting her at that point was, I think, a huge turning point in my career, because we, unlike other relationships with other professors, we must have hit it off or something, because we kept in touch over the years. And then when I left that agency in 10 years ago now, and decided to get out of the government-funded side of the business, Roberta was one of the first people that I connected with and offered me my first contract as a self-employed career consultant, which was, I think, only 2 or 3 hours. Roberta probably would remember that more than I would.
That's such a great story, you know, and I wonder if there's any advice you could share with listeners, especially those who are either in school, post-secondary, or, you know, considering, thinking back, maybe they're a recent alumni, and thinking back to some of the professors and other teachers and instructors, about the importance of making those connections between your professors and instructors.
Yeah, I think it's the relationship building to networking, right? When we think of networking, we think of that schmoozing and how many business cards am I going to get at this event, or, you know, how many resumes am I going to pass out? And that's not the best way to look at it. What we need to look at, relationship building. And sometimes you don't know where the relationship's going to go, but you just know that there's something there, or this person is doing the work that you're really interested in doing, or they seem to have connections, or just you know, what they say resonates with you. So keep in touch with them. Send them an email. You know, with social media these days, follow them on Twitter if they're tweeting and those sorts of things. But build those relationships, and don't always take from it, but give to it. So, you know, sometimes I think when we look at the people in our lives that we are, say, admiring, we think, well, what do they have to offer me? But don't ever think that you don't also have something to offer them. And so if you build that relationship together, you don't know where it'll take you. Maybe it won't take you anywhere, but you just have no idea at the time.
Great, great advice, to invest in those relationships despite not knowing exactly where they lead. And Roberta, what do you remember back from that time? Deirdre was one of your students, and eventually you started working together. What do you remember from that time?
Well, I think Deirdre's being very humble, because she actually owned the agency that she left. And so long before I ever hired Deirdre, Deirdre hired me. And so that's part of that relationship, you know, giving to the relationship. She would bring me in and do staff development kinds of things, and we worked together on projects. And so I think the other piece of advice that I would give people is not always hire your instructor, but to, when you're keeping in touch, you know, think of things that you can be working on together. And the day I did hire Deirdre for Life Strategies was a day that she had happened to send me an email. So that keeping in touch and not assuming that people, you know, have you top of mind or are thinking of you in an emergency is really important, because if that email hadn't come in that day where I had a project due at 6 o'clock that night that I just knew I wasn't going to get to, Deirdre wouldn't have got that first two-hour contract with us, and she took it, and I think this is a really important part of the story, willingly, but saying to me, yeah, I'll get it done for you, Roberta, but I have to let you know today is my Nan's funeral, and so I have to go to that too. And so, like, I'm just touches my heart and, you know, cracks my voice every time I think of that story. And, you know, the humane part of me would say, oh, you know, never mind. But, you know, it was thanks, Deirdre. I really appreciate that you're stepping up to the plate, and I'm really sorry about your grandma. And I think that part of the story is crucial, that we make personal sacrifices and we do things at really inconvenient times, because that's when the opportunity comes up that, you know, who knew would open the doors and she'd be our senior consultant and be working on international projects with us.
That's a great story. Thanks for sharing that. And Roberta, on your end, what's one turning point in your own career story and arc that you could share with listeners?
Well, when I won the Stu Conger Award, I talked about my life as being a series of happenstance events. And so I think there's been a whole bunch of little turning points rather than major ones. And my first job was in student manpower before we even had politically correct language, the higher student programs today. And that came largely out of a friend of my husband happening to work with the government and saying, gee, you really ought to check out this job. And then really being a pity hire in this small town, the only way they could get me off EI was to hire me in. And yet that began my career in career management that's lasted for more than 35 years. The very day I incorporated my company, I also got accepted to grad school, and so that changed the trajectory of where life strategies would go. So there's been a series of those tiny turning points, tiny conversations that actually shifted my career off in new directions.
Yeah, it's so indicative of this, the idea in chaos theory, the small change, the flap of the butterfly's wings in one part of the world causes the hurricane somewhere else. Uh-huh. And so many career stories we've heard on Career Buzz have shared exactly that. And it really seems about being open to those little moments, even though you don't know how giant the effect might be.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, really, let's talk a little bit about each of your areas of expertise. One of the themes of today's show I wanted to look at was the connection between employee engagement and career management's contribution to employee engagement. Now, Deirdre, you've been working on a model of employee engagement that's really new and interesting. Can you tell us a little bit about the components of the model?
Sure. But what I think where what you're asking for, Mark, is perhaps our model of career engagement.
Well, I saw the term career engagement, and I was going to ask you more about that particular term, because I know you've used that term career engagement, and you've been writing about it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that there was your four-factor model, and it looks like you've used those two terms. So maybe you can start by giving us the distinction between career engagement and employee engagement.
From an employee engagement perspective, this came directly out of my doctoral work, because I was when I entered doctoral studies in 2007, I really wanted to look at demonstrating or researching career management as that key driver of employee engagement. It made intuitive sense to me that if somebody was effectively managing their career and all that might entail within the context of their organization, they'd be more engaged. And we see that in the literature now. So, you know, I'm several years into my doctoral studies, and there's report after report where really career management and career development is just on the increase. Organizations are starting to get it, that it's more than just, Joe in accounting have the skills to move up to lead the unit or that sort of thing. It's really looking at Joe as the person and, what might his needs be within the organization, because we know that employee engagement from the model that we've got is contribution, commitment, alignment, and appreciation. So those factors are important. It's not just about whether somebody is willing to go above and beyond for the organization. That's an important component, but it's do they feel appreciated?
So it's really those four components that you just mentioned. They're all really important. The first one, or the one that I've written down here to talk to you a bit more about, is alignment. And it's not the only piece, but it seems to be a quite important piece, the alignment, the idea of fit between the individual and the organization. What role does that alignment play in engagement?
I think it plays a crucial piece, and this is I brought alignment into our model from my work with career. You know, when we're working with people in career planning, we talk to them about their values. What's their motivation for working? What do they value in life? And we live our lives by our values. And so I think when we're looking at engagement, it makes sense that somebody's values need to align with their corporation's values, with what the organization values, what's important to the organization, whether it's making money or doing work for the social good. If there's an alignment of those values, I think engagement is more likely to be present.
And it's so interesting you talk about the alignment of values as opposed to the alignment of skills. You know, we kind of understand that in careers, back to Joe in accounting, he's got to have the right skills to do that job. But we're talking about something bigger here, about the person of Joe as opposed to the skills that he brings to the job.
Exactly. The reality is, Mark, we all know we hire for skill and fire for fit.
Right.
Right. That's the old HR language. And so, you know, when we look at somebody from their sum total of just their skills and their skills that they have, not necessarily what we would call their motivated skills, so the skills they want to use, Roberta's typing analogy was great earlier, then we're only looking at a small component of who that person is, and yet we really want the whole person to show up at work.
And if they do, then there's this notion of contribution, another part of your model. So how does that part work in terms of connecting to employee engagement?
Well, I think that people need to, from an employee's perspective, it's looking at, do you take the opportunities to really contribute at a high level within your organization, whatever that high might look like? So are you contributing to strategic planning? Are you giving back into your to your supervisor about, hey, I saw this challenge and I think I have a solution for us? Or are you looking beyond your role in terms of the contribution that you're making to the organization? Every employee has a role in driving the organization's success. And in some cases, I always used to say that the most important person in my organization was the receptionist.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can't, while they, he or she may be the most junior person on the team, if we want to use a hierarchical, model, they're also a key person. They're talking to everybody that walks in the door. And so we can't, so every employee has a really important role to play, and they need to acknowledge that. They need to know that. Their managers need to understand that. And then how can they contribute to drive the business, whatever the business is.
Now, you've also included appreciation in this model, and that employees are valued. It's one of the things we hear in career management all the time. And in our company, we hear people feel underappreciated or not appreciated, and it sometimes is a cause for people to want to leave. So it's so interesting to see that you've picked up this piece and included it in your engagement model. What did you find about that?
Well, Roberta's was a huge influence in obviously all of this because we work so closely together. But where appreciation came from was not only in some of the literature, but also several years ago, Roberta conceptualized a coaching model called Let's Chat. And CHAT's an acronym for Communicate, Help, Appreciate, and Take Action. And in her work with the models, really noted that appreciation was having such an impact, but also it really interesting that there was management reluctance. So could we change that to analyze or whatever other A words we might be able
yes.
to think of? But so there was some reluctance to be able to find a way to appreciate someone, and I think it's a huge component of engagement. People need to feel appreciated. They need to know that their work is making a difference, no matter how small that difference is. And so as a manager or supervisor, if you can think of, even the person on your team that, drives you crazy, what do you appreciate about him or her? And when was the last time you told them?
So that's so interesting. And the chat model I had down is something I did want to talk to you. So let me pick up on what you just said, Deirdre, and ask you, Roberta, about the chat model that Deirdre just talked about. How did that model come about? And then more importantly, how is it used?
The chat model came directly out of a contract with a large sort of government corporation, quasi-corporation, and they had an employee survey, and it was long before we were using language like employee engagement, But in their survey, it was really clear that, employees, highly, highly skilled, professional level, doctor and master's level employees, were not feeling appreciated. And so I developed the model, Communicate, Help, Appreciate, and Take Action, for supervisors to use in coaching conversations. And the key to the model is that both people come to the meeting prepared. So it might be a quick meeting, like once a week. It might be a quarterly meeting. It might be similar to a performance review, but both people come to the meeting thinking about what they're going to communicate, what help they can offer, as well as what help they need, and what they appreciate about the other person, the organization, the opportunity to work there, and then together they develop an action plan. So we've used the model for its original purpose in coaching, but we also use it in our own organization for team meetings. I've seen it used in group projects in schools, universities. When groups are working together, they've used that to structure their meetings. And a financial institution in Dubai has initiated it as part of their career coaching component of the organization. So it's just been used in ways beyond what I had ever imagined when I developed it.
So it's so great now, and it's such a practical tool. When I first ran into it, actually, in one of your webinars, Roberta, a while ago, I thought, what a valuable tool. Now, if listeners, whether they're managers or individual contributors, if they're listening and thinking about applying this in their day-to-day interactions, what kind of advice or what kind of, you know, I guess, preparation and ways to launch it would you suggest so that they can actually bring this to life in their own lives?
Well, we do have a sort of a one-week orientation training for it. So, you know, that would be one way of doing it. But if people just wanted to take the model and run with it, the acronym is pretty easy to remember. CHAT is Communicate, Help, Appreciate, and Take Action. And so the key would be to introduce the concept to your staff, perhaps at a team meeting, and then send out a reminder note with each of the four components and, you know, what do you need to communicate? What do you need help with? What help can you offer? So the kinds of things that I talked about before. And it's the key to making it work is that people have thought about it ahead of time and they come to the meeting with some ideas in mind. Help is really important as well because of the, in essence, four-way approach, because each individual is coming to the meeting with help they can offer and help they need. And so that's a lot of different ways of looking at help, and relates to our career engagement model, which you didn't really get a chance to talk about with Deirdre, but that's where people are disengaged because they're underutilized in a lot of cases. They've got a lot of capacity that nobody is tapping. And so if you can give them an increased challenge that aligns with their capacity, you're going to move them into engagement. Similarly, people are disengaged because they're overwhelmed. They've got too much challenge for the amount of capacity. And so you can, with this help piece of CHAT, you can give people the help they need in terms of resources, support, upskilling, that are going to move them into a place where they can cope with the challenge and be engaged.
Great,
great models work well.
Great model. So I really encourage listeners to check into that. I found it really helpful. We're talking to Deirdre Pickerell and Roberta Nolt of Life Strategies here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM in the Greater Toronto area and CIUT.FM worldwide. And a special welcome to Association of Career Professionals International listeners from around the globe. Now, Deirdre, let me come back to the model that we were talking about. And there's this interesting way that you've been talking about measuring this, and you've created some kind of indicator to measure, does an organization have employee engagement along these four factors. How has that employee engagement indicator worked out so far?
So far, it's working out well. And it's really interesting to see the results from a full engagement perspective. So that's one way we can run the data. But then there's a series of questions that link specifically to each of the four factors. And so organizations can also see how their levels of contribution, commitment, appreciation, and alignment. And then depending on demographic data that can be collected, because of course we can design those pieces, then you're starting to really see where contribution level is from managers versus
people in non-management roles or across work departments and so on and so forth. And so you can start to see a pattern of where, for example, one organization that comes to mind, huge investment in management and leadership training, and that was reflected partially in results, but the same level of managers did not have the same commitment to the organization. So they were managing their careers. They knew they had opportunities elsewhere. And so there was a disconnect, a huge investment being spent in this particular group, but they weren't as committed as other employees in the organization.
So what would an organization do with results? I think many organizations are actually conducting surveys of one sort or another. You hear a lot about employee engagement surveys. But what I haven't heard a lot of is what people then do with it to pick up the results and do something really smart about it. So in this case that you're giving us the example where the commitment was low among some of the survey respondents, what kinds of things can companies do then with the results of this?
Well, I think that the best practice in employee surveys, or at least some of them, would be don't survey if you're not planning to do something with the results. It's an absolute waste of your time, it's a waste of your money, and it will likely disengage employees faster than almost anything else. So the first thing is to have a communication strategy. Is everybody on board? Because you want to get high response rates. But then also be willing to share results with employees. And that isn't the full, say, report that someone like me might write, but it's giving them a high level, you know, here's where we're at and here's what we're going to do about it. It's after the results go out to employees, having focus groups and don't interpret the data. Talk to employees and then have some interventions. Of course, from my perspective, I think looking at a career management intervention is a fabulous idea.
Yes.
But that might not work for every organization. But actually do something with the results. It's not a ticky box. It shouldn't be we've done our employee survey today and hey look, you know, we've, you know, been raised 2 percentage points from over last year's survey. We must be doing something right. That's not at all what you want to do. If you're not going to actually make use of the results and value the results that you got from employees, no matter what their message is, don't bother.
That's such great advice, and I'm sure lots of listeners who are working in organizations have experienced exactly that. They've been surveyed once, twice, three times. The results haven't been shared with them, and sure enough, it backfires, and you actually become more disengaged because of the survey. So, all right, so that's a really great piece of advice. Don't survey if you're not going to do something about it. But if you do survey, great. You know, the focus groups get people involved. Now, this idea of then having a potential career management intervention as a result of that, what might that look like?
It can be anything. It could be equipping managers and supervisors to have career conversations, perhaps using something like the Let's Chat model, and so that you're actually showing interest in an employee's career, what their hopes and dreams are for their career futures. It could be something like having workshops or supporting webinars around career management, career development. It's getting some understanding within the organization of what career development looks like from what I would consider my perspective as a career development specialist, because there's this whole industry of career practitioners that often don't connect with employers because they're working mostly with the unemployed.
Exactly.
A huge segment of our population. And there's huge expertise there that I think employers could really benefit if they could tap into that.
So that's a really big thought that ought to happen more. It happens a little bit. And of course, the knee-jerk reaction of many employers is, well, I can't have a career conversation or intervention with staff because that means everybody will want to leave. And, you know, of course, we've talked about that on Career Buzz. We've had members of the Canadian Research Working Group here talking about the fact that the research doesn't support that. What have you found in terms of career interventions and career conversations in terms of it actually engaging people as opposed to causing them to leave?
I agree, Mark. We don't see that in the literature that people leave. The reality is for the most part, people's aspirations of becoming, you know, ballerinas and rock stars, that's gone by the time they've been working for a few years. So
yes.
There's no doubt that in some cases somebody will realize this really isn't a good fit for me. And from my perspective, allow them the gracious exit. Don't hold on to workers. All that's going to happen is you're going to disengage them. Allow them to leave. Allow them to leave graciously. And you'll have, you know, there's huge returns for that.
But there's no point in holding on to somebody that isn't a good fit. Ultimately, they will become disengaged, and then they're no use for you. And the likelihood is then they won't leave.
Yes,
because they're not that employable at that point. So I think it's looking at, if you think of a good career fit from the perspective of the whole person, and how can people either grow in place. They don't necessarily have to even switch roles. If you think of balancing challenge and capacity, how can you do that with somebody not actually changing positions? Or is there an opportunity to move them laterally around the organization? Some employees won't even mind stepping back because it's going to position them for a new role within the organization that's going to shoot them up the career ladder even further. So there's lots of ways to be flexible. We shouldn't look at career development as a linear process. It can be all over the place. And we should allow some movement, understanding that employers can't have people switching jobs, you know,
every
6 months or
yes.
something. The productivity would grind to a halt. But is there a way to make it more fluid?
Right on. We're talking to Deirdre Pickrell and Roberta Nolte of Life Strategies here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT. We're going to take a quick break for station ID. We'll come right back. We're going to have a bit more of a conversation with Roberta Nolte about career flow. Be right back with you.
Spring break, a student's best lesson on budgeting money. Time to take ATM fees 101.
I'll spend more on fees than food, dude.
With $1.50 here and $1.50 there, you need to check the back, Jack.
Check what?
Check the back of your debit card for the exchange logo. The exchange is your ticket to no-fee withdrawals, deposits, pin changes, and more at over 2,300 ATMs across Canada. Get the ATM locator app at keepyourchange.ca. Keep your change. Use the exchange.
From the roots up. CIUT 89.5 FM, broadcasting live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
From Heart House,
University of Toronto.
And we're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on CIUT. Before moving on to or continuing on our interviews, I wanted to let listeners know about a narrative method of practice training coming up May 14th and 15th, leading to Holistic Narrative Career Professional or HNCP designation. Check careercycles.com for more info. We're talking to Deirdre Pickrell and Roberta Nolte of Life Strategies here on the show today. And I'm coming back to, Roberta, your focus on career flow. Now, you've written a book together with Spencer Niles and Norm Amundsen, who was also a Career Buzz host some time ago, about career flow. And can you tell us a little bit about career flow and especially the focus on hope? Because you've actually got that as part of the model, a hope-centered approach. How does that work? How does hope fit together with career flow? Sorry, we're just we've got a technical difficulty there, looking for Roberta on the line there. Roberta, do we have you? All right, we're just going to take a quick break as we pull Roberta back in on the phone and continue on the conversation with Roberta and Deirdre. The book that Roberta has written, Hope, Career Flow, and it's called A Hope-Centered Approach to Career Development, builds on a metaphor of flow as if it's a kind of paddling through white water. And in fact, the picture on the front cover of the book shows a paddler, and the paddler has all kinds of white water around. And the idea is that sometimes there's white water and it's pretty active and interactive and things are moving fast, and other times it's still water and you have different skills that are required to manage your career when the water is still. So those two perspectives are really important to consider as you consider career flow. So, Roberta, do we have you back on the line?
Yes.
Okay, great. Sorry, we just lost you there for a minute. So we were just talking about the book and the career flow and the connection to hope and why you put hope in the center of your model. How did that come about?
The model was actually developed before I came on to help write the book. So Spencer Niles and Norm Amundsen were focused on developing a model based on the kinds of water experiences that you were talking about. And it just seemed really important, and certainly fits with my research, that optimism was the single best predictor of career success and job satisfaction. And so optimism isn't exactly the same as hope, but it's that same kind of, you know, positive psychology basis. And so that notion of hope fueling every aspect of one's career. If someone is hopeful about a job, they're going to perform better in an interview. If someone is hopeful about their education, they're going to, you know, choose courses that they can succeed in and move forward. So to take hope out or to look at people who are hopeless are our interventions. If we can focus not so much on skills and actually more on bolstering hope or bolstering optimism, it's actually going to make a really significant difference in people's lives.
Now, the picture on the front cover there has the white water. It's a mm-hmm. quite dramatic picture, and it's an interesting metaphor that you make about the white water times and the still water times, and how you actually need different skills to manage your careers depending on which time in your career it is. Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example? Like, what's a white water time versus a still water time in somebody's career?
And we have lots of other water metaphors. We've used tsunamis in some cases. So when you're in your career in a still water time, it's typically a time that is reflective, is a place for maybe regrouping, a place where you're feeling capable and competent in doing your job. And so that's different than stagnant water. So a stagnant water time would be when you're perhaps in a toxic work environment and you're really feeling stuck. So that would be a very different experience. You're sometimes just in a normal flow where you're going down the river and things are going smoothly, and then sometimes you're going to hit white water. And for some people who are equipped or are thrilled by chaos, then the white water experience is going to be very energizing and very invigorating. And for some people who are, you know, much more steady state folks, they're going to find a white water experience extremely frightening and not an exciting part of their career. And so I think that's important for us to remember as well, that a career experience that looks identical for two or three people on your team, for instance, some kind of a major restructuring, is going to be experienced very differently by each member of your team compared to, you know, their resilience and their level of engagement and their capacity. So a lot of things are going to influence somebody's experience of white water or still water.
And the skills required to manage yourself during those times are different.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it, and I know one of the elements of the model is that self-reflection and self-clarity part where you step back and you think, well, you know, what am I good at? What do I like mm-hmm. about my career? And that's part of the model. Where does that fit in within the metaphor?
The self-reflection and self-clarity pieces are interesting, actually, because our publisher wanted us to combine them, and feedback from a lot of reviewers was, oh, all that self-reflection stuff, it's all the same. And all three of us really stuck to our guns, and we're going to give up the book contract. Like, this was the deal-breaker for us, that we saw self-reflection and self-clarity as quite different. So self-reflection is that Norm Amundsen uses the metaphor of you have to sort of bring your arm back in order to throw a ball.
Yes.
And so it's that stepping back piece to, you know, peacefully reflect on who you are, where you're at in your life right now, what you need going forward. The self-clarity is, you know, it could be using career assessments. It could be conversations with other people. It could be testing your skills. But without it being grounded in that self-reflection piece, it's not going to be as effective. And we also see this not as a linear process, but as a very circular process that's sort of self-feeding, a continuous loop. And so once people get self-clarity, then they're going to pause and go back into reflection, or they may move forward into goal setting and implementing and all of those other pieces of the model.
And in that circular model, and I'm just looking at a picture of it now, you've put the circle, you put hope right in the center of the mm-hmm. circle, and it kind of connects to all these five components.
Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting about hope. There are measures of hope, and there's ideas about hope and the components of it. Part of it is, you know, do you have an ability to see your way through something? And then there's another part about more of a sense of, do you feel confident and competent?
Mm-hmm.
What if we don't have enough hope, or what if our hope is down? How does that influence the career trajectory through this model?
Mm-hmm. And there's also different kinds of hope. So, you know, some people have sort of content-specific hope or confidence. that, you know, I believe that I'm just generally a good athlete. That wouldn't be true for me, but so some people in general will have a belief, and then sometimes it's much more specific. So I'm a good athlete. I know I'm a good athlete, but there's no way we're going to win this game. And so when we're working with individuals, we have to sort of work with them to understand the limits to their hope and build on the hope that's deep within. So find that one place that somebody has had a success or an accomplishment and help them feel those feelings again. And we use story a lot, and I know you really like narrative, but helping people surface those stories. And, you know, if it's a day that they can't think of any of the good stories, focus on some of the challenging times and how they got out of them. And what you can do is take those experiences, those survival experiences, and help them see the capacity that they have.
Great perspective on it. Let me wrap up, Roberta, just to wrap up this part of the interview and move on. Just coming back to the personal and the career story that you shared at the beginning of the interview, what's one thing that you can share with listeners from your own experiences about what it takes to make good career and life choices?
I think I really like John Krumbholz's work on happenstance, and I think the key is to take those opportunities, to put yourself in positions where you're going to stumble across opportunities. You're not going to stumble across them sitting at home, but then take them, follow up on them, and take action, even if you feel like it's a stretch right now, because the skills will come.
Great advice. Thank you, Roberta Nolt, so much for joining us here on Career Buzz. And Roberta, if people want to find out more about you and Deirdre, how do they do that?
Our website is probably the easiest. www.lifestrategies, all one word, .ca.
Great. Thank you and Deirdre for joining us here on Career Buzz today.
Thanks, Mark.
So we've been talking to Deirdre Pickerel and Roberta Nolt about their careers and their work at Life Strategies. Here on Career Buzz, I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and CIUT.FM worldwide. Moving on, I'd like to introduce our next guest, Todd Hirsch. He's a senior economist at ATB Financial, and he tracks current developments in North America's economy. He's written about our need to rethink the notion of careers. For example, he writes, "One thing we need to do is start thinking about a career as something you do rather than something you are." Author of The Boiling Frog Dilemma, Todd appears regularly as an economic commentator on CBC Radio, TV, in the press, and teaches at the University of Calgary. Todd Hirsch joins me live by phone from Calgary. Welcome, Todd.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
Thanks for joining us here. What do you like about your career these days?
Well, my career is as an economist. These are fascinating times to be talking about how not only the global economy, but that the Canadian and North American economies are evolving. So lots of interesting things going on right now.
And what do you do? You're an economist with ATB Financial. What's a typical week for you?
My week is typically, the bulk of what I do really at ATB Financial is I travel around Alberta and Canada, and I give presentations, I give talks about what's going on with the economy. And my goal is to try to not provide people with information, but rather interpretation. Try to give them a sense of what's going on. Try to help them understand the dynamics and how things are changing. Because information isn't really all that helpful. Interpretation, I think, is really what people need.
And what strengths do you draw on to be successful in this career of yours where you're doing a lot of interpretation and public speaking?
Well, the main skill, I guess, is communication, both written and verbal. And I've realized that probably a little bit later in my career. I used to think I was more about numbers and charts and graphs. But now that I'm sort of mid-career, I find out what I'm really good at doing is communicating, both verbally and in the written word, in written form. So that's the skill set that I really try to exercise. And it is a skill set that would be transferable to other occupations, not necessarily just the field of economics.
Right, and I know you write about that, the transferability of skills. I want to come back to that in a moment. But let me get a tiny snapshot of your own career story. What happened in your life that led you to economics?
That's a great question. Well, as I started out as an undergrad at the University of Alberta, and I really didn't know what I wanted to take, so I basically just defaulted to the best grade that I had in high school, and that was math. So I started out as a math major, but then realized in my second year at university, I really wasn't that good at math. I really didn't get it. But I was doing well in this other subject I was taking called economics, which is a much more intuitive, much more of a social science, really, than a hard science like math. So that's what took me down the path of economics, and I've been working now as an economist for about 20 years and love it.
Is there a turning point that you can share with listeners, maybe a transition point either between university and your first job or other jobs, just to illustrate a little bit about your own career story?
I guess so. I worked at the Bank of Canada for about 4 years at the beginning of the 2000s, and that was a really pivotal point for me in terms of understanding what I was good at doing. Then I worked at the Canada West Foundation, which is a not-for-profit research think tank here in Calgary. And that's where I really learned that what I'm good at doing is presentations and writing op-eds for magazines and for newspapers. And that's kind of where I fell in love with the notion of I'm really a communicator. So that was probably the pivotal point for me in my career.
Nice story. I love the way you just said, I fell in love with. You know, when I'm listening to clients and people talk about their careers and guests on the show, it's always that moment when somebody says they love doing something, or they sit forward in their chair and you can see they're just so excited about doing this thing. And sometimes mm-hmm. it's not what you think. Sometimes it has nothing to do with what you studied, but it comes to you because you've done it, and then you can feel it and you say, gee, that's something I really like to do. So thanks for sharing that enthusiasm and saying you loved to do it, even though it wasn't, you know, it's part of economics, but it's not the guts of it, is it?
No, not at all. In fact, the guts of economics, and many more economists, the way they practice, it's much more quantitative, building models and working with numbers and statistics. And that's really a more normal kind of course path for economics. But it goes to show that, you know, any field of study can take you in a bunch of different career moves.
Right.
Mine has taken me in much more communication than number crunching.
Right on. And that's such a key message that everybody needs to hear, especially young people. And I want to talk to you a bit about that in a minute. But what brought me to you first and foremost was an article that you published in Canada's national paper, The Globe and Mail. And it was all about careers. And, it's just over a year ago that you wrote it. But it was this notion about careers, and we need to rethink careers and the way we even talk about the word as more of a verb than a noun. Now, what led you to that notion of the need to rethink careers?
It was interesting. I took part in a conference one time. It actually was sort of a seminar. There was about 20 of us around the table. And what the facilitator had us do, rather than when we introduced ourselves and give a great big long title, our job title, which really doesn't mean anything, he asked us to each write down one verb in what we do at our job, rather than a job title. So I put communicator, and now that gives a whole different meaning to what it is that I do at work, rather than my job title, senior economist. That doesn't really tell you that much. But to identify myself to this group and introduce myself as, I'm Todd, I'm a communicator, and then listening to everybody else around the room giving their one verb that they do in their career, it was interesting, and it gave me a different perspective of what career was.
So that's interesting. And now, you know, we talk about the skills or the strengths that we use, which are more verb oriented, because those move around a bit as opposed to the static noun. Now, you said that many traditional careers are gone. They're not coming back. We have this troublesome structural unemployment, and that's something that we really need to deal with. So what does that mean, first of all, the troublesome structural unemployment?
Well, for young people particularly, you know, there is this transition going on, and maybe it's always been going on, but you feel that it's heightened at the moment. Young people entering the job market or trying to enter the job market and finding, you know, sometimes some difficulties. And obviously, the more skills in education and soft people skills the young people have, the better their chances. But a lot of them, maybe without those skill sets, are having a hard time right now. Finding jobs. So the structural problems with the economy, as we sort of kind of feel our way through the 21st century economy and what it's going to mean, there is going to be some adjustment period, I think, involved.
Now, it's a big problem, not only in Canada, as we've seen some StatsCan data came out in this country showing youth unemployment was 14.5%, almost double or more than double the national average. And then you have countries like Spain, and we hear about things like that. I saw some recent data that said that youth unemployment in Spain is over 50%.
Yeah.
You know, and so these are real issues, and there's this whole question of have we lost a generation? What are some things especially that young people need to think about as they deal with these problems that they're faced with respect to employment?
Well, it is a real concern. And traditionally, by the way, youth unemployment has been higher than overall unemployment. So that's not too unusual. But we are seeing this period right now where it is the difference between youth unemployment and general unemployment is higher, and especially, as you mentioned, in countries like Spain. The real danger, or I guess maybe what young people really need to focus on and be aware of, is getting, again, back to the themes of flexibility, trying to be as flexible as they can, looking for opportunities. So when they come out of school, looking for job opportunities as broadly as possible and not closing doors to something that maybe they hadn't thought about. So if I come out and I've got a degree in economics, I'm not going to be just applying for jobs that have economist in the title, because that's a very, very narrow kind of focus. But rather looking at all kinds of different job opportunities and the potential that maybe lie in those opportunities, and say, well, yeah, I have a degree in economics, but my skill set is teamwork, or my skill set is communication, or my skill set is writing. So how can I use those skills that maybe I gained through my degree or my diploma and look at a broad range of job opportunities? I think that's a key.
Right on. We're talking to Todd Hirsch here. He's a senior economist at ATB Financial and a communicator at ATB Financial. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and CIUT.FM worldwide. So, Todd, you've recently launched a book, The Boiling Frog Dilemma. And I'd like to tie this conversation about careers into the argument in the book. You talk about wealth being generated by ideas, not so much as resources as we have, for instance, in Canada, but ideas, and that that we in Canada and around the world, we need to up our game. So what does that mean, up our game, first of all?
It means, well, if you look at Canada's traditional economy, it's been based primarily in two areas, that the manufacturing that we're seeing in central Canada and resources, which we're seeing predominantly right now in western Canada. But when we talk about upping our game, both in manufacturing and resources, we have to understand that the global economy is changing on us, and we're going to have to make some changes in what we do. In Ontario right now, the manufacturing sector is really feeling the pain of a global economy changing on it. We're feeling the pain of a high Canadian dollar. So the challenge for those in central Canada is to try to identify where do we fit in the value-added chain. It may not always be at that secondary manufacturing level, especially now. Or if it is, what new products, maybe niche products or higher quality or higher value-added products, can we as Canadians concentrate on? In resources in Western Canada, the problem is almost even worse, because there's a sense of complacency out here right now. Our economy in Alberta is doing very well. Resource prices are very high. So we could be tempted to think that, well, our economy's fine, we don't need to be making any changes. But really, it's just the opposite. We need to be upping our game here in Western Canada, looking for ideas of how we can change the way we extract resources, how we can do it more efficiently, and how we can do it in a way that's more environmentally responsible, because the global economy is watching us here in Western Canada, not always favorably. So we need great ideas on how we can extract our resources in a way that is not only more efficient, more cost efficient, but also in a way that is less damaging to the environment.
So now bringing that down to the level of people and choosing careers and thinking about education and the education link to careers, if the world is changing and it's more towards these value-added products and services as you're talking about, how does this affect the way people should be thinking about managing their careers?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I wish there was an easy answer to that thing, you know, look at a career this way or that way. I guess it gets back once again to the theme of flexibility. So if you're starting out your career, regardless of which industry you're in, you may think that you've got great job security, or this industry that you're working in is going to be around forever. That may or may not be the case, and you may have to be flexible in looking at, well, okay, if this job ends on me, or if I outgrow this job, what is the next step I'm going to be making? What industries are growing? How can I work my career and my skill set into those kinds of opportunities? I guess that's probably the best advice I would give. And never, ever falling into a complacent feeling that, well, my job is secure, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. Because that model, like it has for the Canadian economy, is going to end with some trouble.
You know, the number one New York Times bestseller now is this book by LinkedIn author, LinkedIn founder Reid Hoffman, and it's called The Startup of You. The Startup of You, and it seems to argue about us thinking about our own careers from a perspective as if we're a startup company in Silicon Valley, you know, and being very flexible, as you've been mentioning, but really looking at yet again another metaphor for running your own show. You know, you're the CEO of your own career, and looking at things from a very entrepreneurial point of view. And and I know that's part of the theme of your book as well, is thinking about entrepreneurial perspectives, risk-taking, innovation. Now, that's important, you know, and I don't know what the numbers are. Maybe 1 in 100 will then become a successful entrepreneur. But what about everybody else? How can we take the ideas of the need for innovation and creativity and entrepreneurialism and what's being talked about in the Startup of You and apply it no matter what we do, even if we're not going to start a small business, but if we can look at ourselves as entrepreneurial within organizations? How do you see that working?
Well, and that's a big theme in our book. So when we talk about creativity and innovation, we're not really saying everyone's going to become Steve Jobs. I mean, that's not reality, nor is everyone even going to become a self-employed entrepreneur. And we're not suggesting people do. Rather, we're saying the economy is made up of all kinds of people and economic players, and a lot of us are employees that work for companies. A lot of us might work at home. We might be a stay-at-home caregiver. A lot of us might work for a government office. But regardless of what we're doing, we each need to be bringing with us every day toward the task that we're asked to do a spirit of creativity. How can I do today? How can I do it in a way that's more efficient, that's a smarter way to do something? And in that way, we're all kind of entrepreneurs. We're always looking at the task at hand and how can I do this in a better way?
I think that's a key thought, you know, and the more people pick up on that, I think the more we're going to have that vibrant economy and return to success that we need to have in this country.
Absolutely.
Just to wrap up, Todd, let me bring it back to the personal. You've had an interesting career, as you shared at the beginning. One of the skills or strengths that you've really drawn on to be successful is this communication skill, even though it's not necessarily exactly what you learned when you studied economics. From your own personal perspective now, what can you share with listeners about what it takes to make good career and life choices?
Well, good career and life choices, I guess, takes some self-awareness. And that's something that doesn't often come naturally to people, you know, really understanding what drives you as a human being. And to be honest, I know a lot more about myself now that I'm in my mid-40s than I did when I was in my mid-20s. So some of that is it's a process. You have to kind of grow into it. But self-awareness, what am I good at doing? What drives me? What are my passions? Trying to identify those answers rather than how can I get a job that pays money, you know. That's a very practical sort of approach to it. But a longer-lasting approach would be, what drives my passion? And even if I have to take this job right now that doesn't necessarily drive my passion, what skills can I pick up in this job that will feed my passion and that will, like you say, you're the CEO of your own life. So you might look at one job opportunity saying, well, that's not exactly what I want to do, but what can I learn here? What can I gain here that will take me to what I want to do in the future?
Great, great advice. Todd, if people want to find out more about the book or about you, how do they do that?
They can go to www.toddhirsch.com. There's information about me as a speaker and also about the Boiling Frog Dilemma book, how to order that or where to pick up the book.
That's excellent. Todd Hirsch, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. You've been listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations here on CIUT. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. You can find out more about me at careercycles.com.